This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Find out more at canbyfoursquare.com or on Sunday mornings at 9 and 11.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The fifth generation of wireless technology known as 5G is coming, and it's coming fast. They say it's going to change everything, and the city of Canby wants to be ready for it. The Canby Planning Commission spent a work session earlier this month discussing the technology, what it might mean for the Garden Spot, and how its infrastructure should be regulated. The benefits of 5G are fairly obvious. It supports up to 1,000 times more traffic and devices with speeds of 10, 50, or even 100 times faster than 4G. A 5G device could download an entire high-definition movie, or, I don't know, the past 150 episodes of the Canby Now podcast, in less than a second. I want to say that again. In less than a second. It does this by using small cell technology, which is very different than what we see today. Unlike current technology, which relies on tall, high-powered macro towers, like the 130-foot 4G wireless communication monopole that Canby City Council recently approved near Highway 99E, 5G uses small, clustered networks of wireless transmitters and receivers designed to provide coverage to smaller areas. As Canby senior planner Sandy Freund explained during the February 10th work session, she believes 5G will bring a, quote, paradigm shift, and it's much, much more than just a faster phone.
I think that we're going into a paradigm shift here with this new 5G technology, and it's not just about the cell phones. It's about opening up the possibilities of the potential for the innovation across the world. Not only for our phones, but enabling smart cities, smart homes, that really cool refrigerator at Best Buy that you can order your groceries by tapping it. That's based on IoT, Internet of Things. And the technology is driving all of this, robotics, remote surgeries, medical, nanotechnology. They can put these little chips in bridges and it'll start sending a signal when there's a failure approaching or it needs repairing. And it's way into the future infrastructure-wise.
Smart cities, they call it, powered by the Internet of Things with embedded and interconnected digital sensors that would automatically alert the humans when a streetlight goes out or a wastewater pump has reached capacity. Imagine ODOT knowing about the new pothole on 99E before anyone else does. Not because they saw it posted on Canby Now, but because Highway 99E told them. It might sound like something out of Star Trek, but it could happen with 5G. So, well, what's the problem? Well, unlike our new monofur, these 5G small cells will not be disguised as trees. They are visually unobtrusive, resembling an electrical transformer or other utility component, and small enough to be simply slapped on an existing streetlight, telephone pole, or even a building. The size and visuals are not the problem with 5G from a city planning perspective. It's the sheer number of transmitters that will be required. One of the downsides to wireless signals is that they can be blocked by buildings, trees, pretty much anything. That's why 4G towers have to be so tall. But that's not an option with 5G small cells, so the only solution is just to make a lot more of them. According to City Planning Director Brian Brown, quote, they're going to be everywhere.
And he said, this thing's 100 times faster than the 4G phone he had. while he was within a straight of line sight of the antenna, he walked a few feet away and went around the corner of the four-story building. Oh, now it's only doing barely 4G speed. And so you got to be in this direct line of sight. He went behind a tree. It slowed it down quite a bit. Not as much as the building did, but, and so that means what we've already said, they're going to be everywhere where they know they've got a lot of customers that are using it.
Though it may seem like we'd be way down on the list for integrating such a technology, Brown said that the city has already received 5 inquiries from prospective service providers about bringing 5G technology to Canby. The FCC has also reached out wanting to know information about the city's review process, fees, turnaround time, and siting and other code requirements. Right now, there is no language in the Canby Municipal Code concerning 5G, hence the work session. Exactly where these small cells would go is an open question. The most common location for them is on telephone poles, but all of Canby's poles are owned and operated by Canby Utility, which has never shared their real estate with wireless communication providers in the past.
And they've said to date that they won't allow co-location of any of these wireless facilities on their poles because it's poses a potential safety hazard if they should ever have to work on their own equipment or line that's on that pole if it's also got these other things in there that could be a problem. And I don't know whether that will hold up over time, that position that they're taking. But that automatically means all of our existing telephone poles, which is the number one place they locate, are off limits and can be.
Commissioners and city staff discussed various concerns about the 5G revolution, including the noise that the small cells may generate, their exponentially higher rates of energy consumption, and the possible health impacts of the increased wireless signal. Planning staff will continue to work on draft regulations to be presented for consideration at a later date. Seven people were injured in a fiery two-vehicle crash on Woodburn-Estacada Highway near Dryland Road Sunday afternoon. According to a preliminary report by the Oregon State Police, the crash occurred when a silver Ford Explorer, driven by a 17-year-old juvenile female whom police did not identify, collided with a silver Toyota Tacoma truck driven by 66-year-old Si Sang Zhao at approximately 3:45 p.m. The OSP's preliminary investigation indicated the juvenile driver caused the crash by failing to stay in her lane. The Explorer caught fire following the crash while the Tacoma flipped onto its side, trapping the occupants inside. 2 state troopers arrived on the scene before medical personnel and triaged the 7 injured occupants. 2 patients were transported by separate life flight helicopters with severe injuries. The road was closed for several hours while crews worked the scene. Responding agencies included Oregon State Police, Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, Canby Fire District, Malala Fire District, Colton Fire District, Malala Police Department, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, Life Flight, and the Oregon Department of Transportation. Barely 12 hours later, another two-vehicle crash closed Highway 211 between South Oswalt Road and Lynn Marie Lane near Colton. The crash occurred at approximately 5:19 a.m. on Monday and sent both drivers to area trauma centers. The highway was again closed for about an hour while the Oregon State Police investigated. According to the preliminary report, the collision occurred when a gray Subaru Legacy driven by Christopher Silva, 28, crossed into the oncoming lane for unknown reasons and crashed head-on into a blue Ford F-150 pickup driven by Michael Ray Coos, 65. Both drivers are residents of Malala. Both were transported to OHSU for treatment, Silva being transported via Life Flight, which landed at nearby Colton High School. Both vehicles were towed from the scene by Always Towing in Sandy. No citations have been filed in the case, though OSP says its investigation is continuing. They have up to 6 months to file a citation if they ultimately believe it is warranted. Involved agencies included Colton Fire, Malala Fire, Estacada Fire, Clackamas Fire, OSP, Malala Police Department, ODOT, and Lifelight. The future of search and rescue calls in our area is changing as the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office has revealed plans to form a new nonprofit SAR, Search and Rescue, SAR team for Clackamas County, one that will include local search volunteers working together with the Sheriff's Office employees under a single unified banner. When Clackamas County Sheriff Craig Roberts and others tout the merits of the move, saying it mirrors models that have proven successful in other counties, it could mean the end of a highly regarded and independent organizations that have already been dedicated to local search and rescue efforts for more than two decades, like Portland Mountain Rescue. Sheriff Roberts said, quote, "Our research says this is the right way to go. It's a model that's raised the bar for search and rescue in other counties. We look forward to bringing those volunteers under one umbrella and making those working relationships even closer and stronger. It's the right move for Clackamas County." Roberts says the plan for the new consolidated team comes in the wake of months of research and study, as well as interviews with other search teams successfully using the unified team model. But not all love the move. Portland Mountain Rescue is a volunteer organization made up of about 75 specially trained rescuers and is recognized as one of the leading rescue units in the country. On Facebook, Portland Mountain Rescue said they support the sheriff's effort to improve search and rescue in Clackamas County and, quote, welcome many of the changes he wants to make. However, they continued, we believe public safety can best be protected by preserving the attributes of the Portland Mountain Rescue that are critical to safety and effectively performing rescues on Mount Hood. Portland Mountain Rescue leadership have expressed concerns that Mount Hood, the second most climbed alpine mountain in the world, needs a dedicated and specially trained team, not a unit of general volunteers. Sheriff Roberts says the formation of a single unified search and rescue program for Clackamas County comes in the wake of recent litigation at the recommendation of Clackamas County Council and following a comprehensive study by the Sheriff's Office. The Sheriff's Office was sued by the family of a climber who died on Mount Hood in 2017, alleging that the rescuers did not get to him fast enough. Roberts says Clackamas County search and rescue missions are increasing along with the county's population. He says local response times and communication will improve with a single dedicated team. He said, quote, the research says forming this team is the right move for Clackamas County residents. Search and rescue in Clackamas County involves much more than Mount Hood. It's demanding and complex across wilderness and urban environments. If a major disaster happens here, this will allow the quick deployment of search and rescue resources dedicated to Clackamas County. Efforts are currently underway to establish the nonprofit Clackamas County Search and Rescue as a work group finalizes plans for the new unified team. Applications are now open to current SAR cardholders interested in becoming members of the new team. So, for a link to that application, or to see the full report on Clackamas County Search and Rescue, find this story on our website at canbenowpod.com. After what the owners termed two lovely years in downtown Aurora, the Aurora Company has announced it will close its doors at the end of the month. The store was known for its unique selections of stylish and contemporary women's clothing, artisan jewelry, and apothecary items. In a Facebook post, owners Mike and Stephanie Such said the decision was made to focus on their two young children, Mia and Sophie. It has been an incredible journey, and we feel honored to have been a part of the community and a place you've loved to shop, they said. We can't thank you enough for supporting our dreams and enriching our lives. The Suches began their business with the Farmhouse Romance Boutique in Carlton before expanding to Aurora, where they now live. They plan to close both stores, beginning with the Aurora Company at the end of February, followed by the Farmhouse Romance, located at 128 West Main Street in Carlton, in late March at the earliest. At the very base of it all, we look to bring beautiful things into your life, the family said. We hope that was something we achieved. The owners are going out with a bang, offering deep discounts of up to 50% off at both stores. They currently have a full selection, and on Valentine's Day debuted a More to Love sale that will continue until they close. The news that the unique Aurora store would be closing was greeted with sadness from longtime customers. Ah, so sad to see them go, a local friend told us. They're in Aurora, but I know many people in Canby shop there, including me. And an Aurora resident said, "You have brought such a bright and stylish light to Aurora. Big fan and wish you well as you give more love to those two sweet kiddos. Thank you." Should Oregon drivers be subject to having their licenses suspended for not being able to pay fines and fees? The system's been in place for many years, but maybe not for much longer. The Oregon House of Representatives took a step toward ending that practice this week when they passed House Bill 4065, which would make it so drivers no longer have their licenses suspended simply for failing to pay court fines and fees. According to the Oregon Law Center, more than 334,000 license suspensions have been issued in the past decade. These suspensions, which impact individuals who are unable to pay fines and fees, perpetuate cycles of debt and poverty and deprives individuals of the ability to get to work, school, or the doctor. Further, according to data recently released by the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, Black and Latinx people are disproportionately stopped, ticketed, charged, and convicted. As a result, fine and fee-based license suspensions disproportionately impact communities of color, in addition to low-income Oregonians. Representative Carla Peluso, a chief sponsor of the legislation and former Gresham police chief, says, quote, "Suspending licenses when someone can't pay isn't effective. Taking a driver's license away from an Oregonian for not paying a fine or fee does not make our roads safer. It is important to end the use of a policy that negatively impacts people simply because they don't have money." Proponents of House Bill 4065 claimed bipartisan support, and the bill did indeed enjoy sponsorship from both sides of the aisle, including from Representative Christine Drazen, House Republican leader and state representative from Canby. However, every non-absent Democratic member of the House voted for the measure, while 16 of 22 Republicans voted against. The bill has also not been well received by local commenters online. Quote, "If one can't afford the consequences of one's actions, perhaps it would be wiser to be more careful about not breaking the law," said one local resident on the Canby Now podcast Facebook page. "Oh, this is ridiculous," added another. "Zero consequences for poor decisions. People need to be held accountable. No wonder we have problems with drugs, thefts, etc." The bill, which passed 42-16, now heads to the Senate for consideration.
Hey, Tyler, I have to tell you about something.
All right.
This buddy of mine was telling me his internet bill went up right after the holidays. Can you believe it?
I'm sorry, what?
I know. Talk about a Grinch move, am I right?
Why would their bill go up at that time of year, Frankie?
Well, they said it was because of overage fees from going over their data cap. Probably because they had family home for the holidays with way more people than usual using their Wi-Fi. Think about it. You've got kids playing games online, parents streaming TV shows and movies, plus all of the devices everyone has that are connected to the Wi-Fi network. That's a lot of stuff using up data, and they were charged extra for it.
That's super weird. I didn't even know there were like actual things called data caps for internet providers. I use a ton of data every month right here in the studio. And well, I've never seen an extra fee.
Yeah, that's because we have DirectLink. With them, not only will we never be charged extra fees for using lots of data at any speed, but they also never slow down our internet speed for high usage. It's all part of their commitment to unlimited internet.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, hey, it sounds like your friend should switch over to DirectLink.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, friends, it's James again. Do you know who are the most amazing people in the world? Well, I mean, you, the listener, of course, but especially those folks who are our Canby Now Plus members. These are the folks who subscribe on Patreon and help financially support the best and finest local journalism in the entire Willamette Valley. I would say even the West Coast. I don't think that's too much to say. Today, we want to give a special shout out to our good friend and neighbor, Sharon Kisor. Sharon, I'm so sorry. Is it Kisor? 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 We don't really know. But Sharon, if you're listening, we're grateful for you. We rely on monthly contributions from wonderful people like Sharon to continue to do this work that we really love. So to find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, you can visit canbenowpod.com/plus.
On the Canby conversation today is a man who is helping keep a more than 60-year tradition alive in our community. No, it's not the tradition of me going over time in my interviews. It's the tradition of barbershop music and the Oregon Trail Pitch Pipers. We're joined by a member of that group, Daniel Stelp. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Tell us a little bit about the Pitch Pipers and their history. As I mentioned, it goes back quite a ways.
Yeah, so this year, I believe we're actually going to be celebrating our 54th show, if you can believe that. Yeah, the Canby Oregon Trail Pitch Pipers have been in business for that long, bringing joy and singing to the community out here for so many years. And we're excited to announce our new upcoming show here.
Yeah. So the annual show is coming up here in a couple of weeks. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the show is going to be on March 14th at the Richard R. Brown Fine Arts Center over at the Canby High School, and it's going to be there from 3 o'clock to around 5 p.m. We got some great guests this year.
Mm-hmm. Who are they?
Some great...
besides me, obviously.
Yeah, clearly.
I don't want to give it away, the big finale, but be making my singing debut. I'm sure everyone's excited.
Hey, you know, you're more than welcome to join us. This year's program, we're going to be bringing back Mugshot. That is a mixed quartet from the Portland area. They actually won first place at the Evergreen District Mixed Quartet Competition this last year. Then also we're bringing in the brand new mixed chorus from the society called PDX Voices. They're from Portland, also placing first this year in the Evergreen District Competition, as well as Canby's very own high school touring chamber choir, the Cantilenas, are going to be there.
The Cantilenas are the best.
So, yeah, we got a wide variety of different talent this year and really, really excited to highlight some of the new stuff that's happening in the society. They moved to a mixed chorus, inviting women into the society as well. And there's some really neat stuff happening, and certainly love to highlight the local Canby chorus as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a little bit of a barbershop music scene in the Portland area. Is that right?
That is correct. The newest chapter in the Evergreen District, which covers Oregon and Northwest, is actually PDX Voices. Mm. Really exciting group, and very pleased to see Mugshot come back as well. They were a real big hit last year.
Yeah. For the Portland area, is it similar to Canby? The tradition of that kind of music goes back quite a long ways?
I believe so. I really don't know much about the history.
Well, come on, Daniel. I told you to study for this. No, just
I tried real hard this year.
Oh, your kids probably kept you away from some of the studies. They do that to me, too.
You know, it's interesting.
My kids, not yours.
You know, it's interesting. Barbershop certainly has some great roots in Oregon. I believe there's some connections even to Bing Crosby in the Southern Oregon area.
Oh, really?
Which is pretty fascinating. I actually got my start in barbershop singing for the hometown chorus down in Roseburg.
You know,
a couple hours south.
Not very well known, but Lewis and Clark were actually barbershop musicians. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
I just made that up.
Hence why I probably didn't know. Yeah, it actually started, I believe the society started in, the 30s, but certainly barbershop has its grassroots in the vaudeville days. Certainly barbershop has evolved and changed over time, and we like to stick with the change too. So.
Yeah. Well, it's still around, obviously, still folks enjoying that kind of music. Some of them a little bit older, but you yourself are a younger guy. What appeals to you about this kind of music?
You know, the biggest thing for me is the ability to go out, have fun, sing with one another. And there really isn't anything like singing barbershop, you know. Certainly grabbing three other guys and going and singing in a quartet is one of the highlights. There just isn't anything else like it. And I would encourage people, if you're interested, come out and check us out. Mm-hmm. It's certainly a blast. And we certainly love it. We enjoy coming out every week and practicing and performing shows for you guys.
Yeah. Do you have some kind of connection? I imagine for like some of these folks, you know, some of this music is sort of nostalgic for them or something that reminds them of their childhood. Is that maybe something you grew up with in your family, or just is there something about the music that appeals to you in some other way, just its style or the quality of it?
You know, really what got me interested in barbershop, and I'm going to start dating myself a little bit here. Uh-oh. I grew up watching stuff on Laserdisc.
Okay.
So that's kind of my era, but
Do you remember VHS?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And recording off TVs.
The click, clack, clack. Yeah. Rewinding. You remember rewinding?
Yeah. But I grew up watching The Music Man. The performance, Robert Preston, of course, doing the Y'all Got Trouble thing.
Yeah.
But there was a quartet featured on that program, yeah. The Buffalo Bills.
Sure.
And they were award winners, I believe, in 1955. And after watching that so many times, and it's like, wow, that would be something really cool to be able to be a part of. And one of the guys in church invited me out to say, hey, you know, we do this barbershop group thing. Would you like to check us out? And all it took was one little visit there. So pretty neat. And I've always been interested in singing, been singing for a very long time. So mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, this year's show, the annual chapter show, you guys mm-hmm. call it, has a certain theme to it that I'm really excited about. I think it was a good call.
Yeah, this year's program is going to be Songs of America. So we're doing all patriotic theme songs
all
this year.
All country songs.
There's probably a, maybe we'll sneak in a country
song. Achy, breaky heart.
No, probably not. Certainly we'll be highlighting some new music that we haven't sung or performed before for you guys.
Yeah.
I won't tease too much of it. You got a couple of recordings
we'll have
to feature.
A little sample of it coming up here at the end of this interview of folks. I can look forward to that. Patriotic songs, some songs that really go back to even like revolutionary era and mm-hmm. Times from history. So even older than some folks' childhood, but still in camp.
Yes, yes, yes.
These are things that you kind of maybe did grow up with in childhood, but because they are, you know, fun to sing as kids and stuff like that and are patriotic.
Yeah, and we're going to be sneaking in some history in our theme this year, as well as some of our. So we have not just singing, but also acting parts as well. And we're going to be featuring some famous speeches in the past.
When I got here, I was hearing a little bit of a speech. We won't spoil it, but yeah.
It involves a guy in a top hat. I'll just say that.
P.T. Barnum. There.
Yeah.
Darn it. Cats out of the bag. I was really excited when I heard that speech. What was there a particular reason to go with the patriotic theme this year?
So every year we try to survey and poll our chorus. Mm. And we had a couple of ideas up for nomination this year. But patriotic really resonated with the majority of our chorus this year. And certainly we want to feature, you know, in the midst of all the political nonsense that's going on, which side of the fence people are on, there's still the nation that we love. You know, and we want to be able to highlight that and really share our love for America.
It's and so here's the part of the interview where we get super political. No, I'm just kidding. But it is a big election year. There's, you know, the Democratic primaries going on. Lots of people are talking about it. Lots of people thinking about it. There's people, lots of people fighting over it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to, I think, just, I'm just done. You know, like, I'm done with all of this stuff. I'm just disengaging. I love that you guys are flipping that on its head a little bit and being like, yeah, we're not going to get into the political stuff, but there are things about this country that we have in common, right?
Yes.
There are things that we can hold on to and should hold on to, things that are part of every single American's, every single one of our heritage. It's part of this shared legacy that we have, and that is worth holding on to, and it should be treasured, yeah. I think that's really cool. Is this the first time you've done a show like this with the patriotic songs? Or because I feel like that would be any time of year would be a pretty big hit here in Canby.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I haven't been in the area long enough to tell, but certainly it's something that we haven't probably done in at least the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. I feel like it's, and I think you mentioned that some of the parts will sort of be encouraged for the audience to join in, but I feel like some of the songs are definitely going to be lend themselves to that.
Yeah, certainly there's going to be quite a number of songs that everyone will recognize, even though they might not at first. Certainly by the end of the song, you'll know what it was.
Yeah, some of the songs that we are about to play, I didn't realize had other verses.
Yeah. the first one. You know, some you don't. Yeah.
Earlier, Daniel, about the society, the barbershop music society kind of changing a little bit and opening up to mixed groups. Mm-hmm. Is that something that might be coming to Canby as well? I noticed there's a lot of dudes in the current quartet, as it's always been, as is tradition.
Yeah. Yeah. Early to tell.
Okay.
We'll tease that out. I'm not quite sure kind of what the plan for the future is, but certainly we want to try and be as inclusive as we can. Now, over the last couple of years, we've talked about it as a board. We'll see where it goes from there. But
Cool. Would be nice to maybe open that up if there are folks interested in that. If there are men interested in joining your group, at least that's what it's open to right now. Mm-hmm. How does that process work? I think I understand it's pretty wide open. You've invited me a couple times, and I don't want to break anybody's glasses or just make everybody quit because of how bad I am. But
yeah, all it takes is just come out any Tuesday night at 7:00 p.m. here at the Canby Adult Center. We're more than welcoming. We have some guest books that you guys can use if you show up and want to practice with us.
Cool.
One of the other things that we're going to be indicating at our program is we will be having a guest night where people are encouraged to come out, check us out, sing with us, and just have a great time.
Yeah. My father-in-law was telling me about, he went to Canby High School here, some years ago, and he was part of the choir. And there's just, as we've mentioned, the Cantilenas, the Canby High Choir is amazing right now, but that apparently goes back even generations. Like, there's a really long history of excellence at our local high school choir. And like my father-in-law, he was kind of talking, there are a lot of folks that are alumni of that choir, that chorus, that, might be looking for an opportunity to revisit some of that and just a chance to sing and do some of that. So this would be a great opportunity for them.
Most definitely. And we love to be able to highlight the hometown choir as a part of this program and really feature young performers, because ultimately everybody does get old, and getting in the fresh talent and new people interested in our hobby will keep it going for years to come.
Yeah. That's another tradition, is getting old.
Yeah.
So March 14th is the big show, Canby Fine Arts Center. Where can folks find tickets?
Yeah, so you can either go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Oregon Trail Pitchpipers. You can also check out our website at pitchpipers.org there.
It's just one.org. It's not .org.org.
No, but I would be talented if I was able to do that. And we're also going to be posting some flyers out for you guys to check out in the area here. But certainly find the latest, greatest information out there on Facebook. We'll have that up to date.
We'll put a link into the show notes for this episode as well, if folks want to check that out. And I think you can find them in person as well, or at the door.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tickets will be sold at the door as well as online. So feel free to get your tickets at either time. Adults are priced at $15 per person, and then $7.50 for kids under 16 with an adult.
Well, thank you so much, Daniel, for talking to us. And now we're going to play a little sample of what folks can find.
Awesome. Enjoy. Thank you.
I'm here at Advantage Mortgage with Derek Hill. And Derek, you were telling me about something that just came down from Fannie Mae that people might be interested in.
Yeah, Fannie Mae just came out with a report that said that the average homeowner in the United States has approximately 70% equity in their home.
Oh, now, wow.
Right. I mean, that's obviously average throughout the whole country. But because values have come up so substantially in the last 10 years, there is a ton of equity available that people can utilize.
Cool. So if people are potentially like looking to buy or move into a new home, you're saying that equity means it might be something that you would look at remodeling instead of if the market's not looking favorable to you.
Right, 100%. Because the market in Portland is so tough to buy, you know, we have an average of like 2.5 months worth of inventory, so it's just super hard for people to find what they're looking for. It may be just easier for them to take out some equity and do the upgrades or do an addition or pay off some debt or lots of different things. And that's one of the things that we love to do with people is sit down with them and kind of go over a game plan. You know, Cool. Just that's one of the biggest things is knowing what you can do. And we love taking the time to do that for people.
Awesome. Awesome. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call.
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat. And we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
So just remember, Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, equal housing opportunity.
Sea to shine. went to London just to ride the ponies. I am the Yankee Doodle Boy, the boy. I am the Yankee Doodle Boy, Doodle Boy, Doodle
Boy. Canby Then is brought to you, as always, by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop, and they're open daily. You can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street here in downtown Canby. Named after one of the most colorful and unique figures of the city's early history, the incomparable teacher, Oregon Trail pioneer, gold prospector, newspaper editor, attorney, politician, farmer, and Supreme Court Justice Aaron Emmons Waite, Waite Park has long been a center of Canby life. I mean, it is literally located pretty much square in the center of town. It's also, in many ways, the city's cultural center, playing host to many of our most popular and well-known events, from Canby Independence Day celebration, once known as General Canby Days, to Light Up the Night, which draws thousands to downtown Canby each year to help ring in the holiday season. The property that would one day become Waite Park was part of the original 1870 plat for the city of Canby filed 150 years ago. It was originally part of the donation land claim of Canby founding father Philander Lee, who deeded the land for the city's first 24 blocks, which he laid out with the help of his son Albert and a team of oxen. You see, it was once part of the Canby Municipal Code that streets be wide enough to turn around an ox-drawn wagon, and Philander put this to the test back when streets were being measured out. I don't want to tell you how long that old law stayed on the books here in Canby, but suffice to say it was well into the age of the automobile. Anyway, at some point, the land that would become Waite Park became part of the 596 acres of prime farmland acquired by Judge Waite after his legal career ended and he dabbled in realty. He ultimately retired there to work his land until his eventual death on December 12, 1898, at the age of 85. Another part of the judge's land was donated to build the old White School by William Knight, while 40 acres would be bought by a citizens' organization in 1908 and later transferred to property of the county. Today we know that little parcel as the Clackamas County Fairgrounds, but that's a story for another time. Before all of that, the land passed to his only surviving son, Charles Nicholas, more commonly known as C.N. Waite. And though Waite Park is named after the judge, it's really his son to whom we owe our thanks that the park ever became what it is today. C.N. Waite was one of the city's first mayors after Canby was incorporated in 1893, serving from 1900 to 1902. He was also the longtime city attorney and, of course, a judge. You can tell exactly how exciting life in Canby was during the early 1920s when this story makes the front page of the local newspaper. That of C.N. Waite seemingly being the only Canby citizen to witness the fall of a meteor on Sunday, July 15, 1928. Here is the Canby Herald's breathless description of the encounter. He happened to be up late that night, and he was looking out toward the highway, where automobile lights were seen in long strings moving in either direction, when suddenly the whole sky became light as day. Above him, the meteor could be seen tumbling westward. It appeared to fall in the Willamette River, Mr. Waite said, but it probably went down to earth or water hundreds of miles away. A huge, ravenous, blob-like creature invaded the town soon after that. But that, too, is a story for another day. Waite did see the occasional colorful episode as Canby's city attorney, not the least of which was at the time, in 1936, he was called on to referee the question of whether Fire Chief Fred Larson could continue in his service despite not being a naturalized U.S. citizen. City Attorney Waite expressed his opinion that, quote, there's nothing in the statutes to prevent an alien from holding appointive office, end quote. But Larson's rival, Councilman Peter Horning, was determined to get his vengeance in the long-running political feud. As recounted in the Canby Herald, Quote, carrying out his threat to seek higher authority, Horning searched the city charter and finds that Section 9 provides no person is eligible to hold office in the municipal corporation who, at the time of his election or appointment, is not entitled to the privileges of an elector. Checkmate, Chief. Conceding that, quote, the city charter is the foundation of all municipal government, Larson tendered his resignation. C. N. Waite himself resigned on July 7, 1938, and for unknown reasons. He died the following year. But just before his death, he set into motion the first steps in securing the city's first park. Waite Park was at the time occupied by several strange structures, including the Band's Hall. Built in 1912, the Band Hall was located at the corner of what is now Waite Park. It was owned by the Canby School District and used for graduation, basketball games, and gym classes, while the Canby American Legion Post 122 used the back half of the building. On June 5, 1939, C.N. Waite sent a quit claim deed to the city of Canby for 7 lots in downtown Canby, with an option to purchase the remaining 3 lots in the block from George Cummings for a cool $100 apiece. The deed was not without strings attached, however. To take title to the property, the city had to agree to pay back taxes on the Waite land to the tune of $556. By the 1940s and 50s, the property featured a roller skating rink and baseball diamond, which had lights and seats installed in 1953, just in time for the summer baseball and softball seasons. Wise car owners soon learned not to park around the perimeter when a game was in progress, or at least when a long ball threat was at bat. The park also boasted a Quonset hut, a former army structure that was surplused after the Second War ended in 1945. It was used as a youth center, and then later by Boy Scout Troop number 258. With all this activity, it's remarkable that the block did not officially become a city park until the late 1960s, and it wasn't officially dedicated or named until 1972. Perhaps the city council was still occupied with checking the immigration status of its prospective fire chiefs. The city had razed many of the old buildings to clear way for the park and had acquired a few more lots to fill things out, including gifts from William and Eva Herman and the estate of Daisy Van Mortelet. It happened on a clear, beautiful July day when over 150 people turned out to hear then-city attorney Wade P. Bettis dedicated Waite Park, quote, to all the people of Canby and those of the future, for your enjoyment. According to the Herald, some of those in attendance were from Canby's earliest families, the Lees, the Waites, and the Knights among them. The plat was unveiled by Portland resident Aaron E. Waite, son of C.N. and grandson of the judge. Bettis introduced him to the crowd as the son of the donors of the land on which you now stand. The iconic gazebo was added in 1984, a gift from the Canby Arts Association. Its use for the Slice of Summer concert series and many other musical events throughout the year recalls the earlier days of band concerts in the city's first park. What the heck is that weird rock on Knightsbridge Road? Could it be the meteor Charles Waite saw all those years ago? Spoiler alert, no. No, it's not. But we'll tell you all about it and what it really means next time on Can Be Then.
Hey, Tyler. So it's February, and you know what that means. You know, there's a certain feeling in the air.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Tax Valentine. Time.
What? Valentine's.
No, I was saying tax day is coming up for when you file.
Oh. But it's also Valentine's, you know.
Oh, man. You know, I might need to call my wife real quick. I might be in trouble.
Okay. Well, if you're looking for some place to have a fun date night, you can always try the Wild Hair Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun. They've been in business for over 16 years, serve a fresh, locally sourced menu, and donate over $20,000 to Canby Sports and other causes each year. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or just go to their website, thewildhairsaloon.net.
Hey, honey. So, good news, bad news. Good news, we got our taxes filed early this year.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me,
Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Can Be by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Can Be Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Can Be Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.